When I found it, it had turned to dead black coal. Silver magic ships, you.
One day fine, 10 years have got behind you. No one told you when to run. You missed the starting gun.
Hi everybody, welcome to our Skepta special where we're going to go through every song by Skepta, track by track, and analyse all their film clips.
We're not really recording yet though, are we?
We are recording.
You're a fucking moron. Folks, welcome to the Balls Podcast After Dark, episode 50. Holy shit on a fucking stick, we made it to 50 episodes. Wow. It's our Desert Island Discs Spectacular.
Yes.
Spectacular.
No new music this week, folks.
Only old music, because we're old. Mm. And just to prove how old we are, we have a special guest, Adam H. Photo.
Hi, Adam.
Howdy.
How does it feel that you can reply to my sledges directly rather than having to defend yourself on Twitter like you normally do?
Oh, no, I much like a multinational audience on Twitter. I get more backup there.
Yeah.
All the other Def Leppard fans backing you up.
I can't see the doc defending your musical tastes on the pod this week. So.
Well, I don't know.
That's exactly my point.
So for those that haven't been following along, we thought we'd do something a little bit different for the 50th episode, which is the Desert Island Discs. And I haven't listened to a heap of this show. I've listened to it a little bit because they started podcasting it. But the basic conceit of it is, rather than pick your top five albums, which is sort of, like, it's a hard thing to do, but, you know, you can pick your top five, but it doesn't mean you have to pick five albums that you only get to listen to for the rest of your life, which puts a completely different frame of mind on it because it's like, well, can I really live without listening to this album ever again? And that's what
can I really live with only having these five albums to live with?
Yeah,
until the end of linear time.
So, and that was the thing that I really struggled with this week is can I cope with not ever hearing this music again? And I care quite deeply about some of the albums I'm attached to.
Did you need a tissue, Bubby?
I do, mate.
You okay?
I had a little cry. Bubby. I had a little cry.
It's all right. It's only imaginary. It's not real. It's just bad dream. Just bad dream.
Yeah.
Just bad things. Don't eat chocolate before bed.
I have actually, I was saying before the podcast that a lot of these albums that I've picked and sort of the ones that didn't make my list, I haven't listened that much to over the last 12 to 18 months because I've been doing a podcast where we have to listen to new music every week.
What this has been fantastic for has been finding potential classic albums.
Yes, that's right.
Holy fuck, that's great. And I haven't actually done that one yet.
I was like, oh man, I forgot. How could I have not done this as a classic already? So, and not too many of the albums that I've done as classic albums have actually popped up on my list. So
that's interesting.
Mm.
Why is that?
Is
that because you're forgetful of the? Is that because you just hadn't done like a full stock take, or was that just because the assessment criteria are so different between the classic album and the Desert Island album in your head that they're two almost different subsets? Because for me, I ended up going back to classic album concepts with in terms of the rules that we have for selecting classic albums for the pod. I said, right, okay, now I'll just stick with actual albums, and they've got to be, you know, this, and they've got to have this, and they've got to have these qualities.
Yeah. Well, what sometimes, in one example was I picked one of the albums as a classic, but gun to my head, you have to pick one album of this band to take with you forever and all. I actually picked a different album to take with me.
Yeah, you picked Matterhorn rather than Boats.
No. But it's a much newer album. So with the classics, I almost feel like the classic album that we do on the pod lends itself to the older albums that people might not have heard or have a little bit more of an emotional resonance, because that's the album that helped me discover a particular band.
Yeah, yeah. I know that I have a rule. I don't know if we've ever discussed this, but my rule on classics is nothing newer than 5 years old.
Well, which was always the problem with the hottest 100s of all time. They almost needed a 5-year moratorium on that. So,
absolutely, because recency bias just shot the shit out of them.
You get stuff that's insanely popular right now, but in 2 years' time, no one's going to give a fuck about. So
exactly right. I mean, if you look at some of those hottest 100s of all time that happened after the hottest 100 of each year had happened for a few years, like they did one in sort of 98, 99, and it was full of shit that you wouldn't have voted for a year or two later. It was a mess.
The top five was sort of pretty good. But yeah, definitely down the list, like in that sort of 50 to 100 range, you're getting a whole heap of stuff that's essentially just a hottest 100 vote.
There was like, it was like a mid-year hottest 100. It was like 311 and just fucking absolute shit.
So that's sort of what informed my... And it was really interesting on Facebook, sort of chatting to people about saying, this is not...
Did you really just say it was really interesting on Facebook? Because it is never really interesting on Facebook.
It was for me this week. I was quite surprised. So
you inspired the Great Unwashed, did you?
No, that's just me.
You're the Great Unwashed. That was like, it's like an ad for a credit union, isn't it? That's the Great Unwashed.
Is that a Northern Rivers thing? Is that something?
Yeah, it is. It is. Adam will back me up.
Very much so.
Yeah, there he is. He's still alive.
So shall we jump in? Who wants to?
Well, here's the thing. We should. We had many a tremendous submission from our audience and people who aren't in our audience who we just happened to rope in. I was thinking maybe we could crash through some of that stuff before we got into our own fives. What do we think, gentlemen?
Well, I'll quickly touch sort of before I sort of rip through some of the...
Don't quickly touch yourself. This is not that sort of context.
Some of the little trends. So before I sort of go through actual top fives, a lot of Radiohead, but no consensus on what the best Radiohead album was.
Oh, it's Blur all over again, isn't it?
None of
the above.
A lot of stuff from people that work with me in the music industry and yet picked stuff from essentially their high school, early uni days, which I found really, really interesting. You know, they're the sort of people that I didn't expect to come out with some of those picks.
But people are people, though, aren't they? Yeah. You're always... I mean, I think I don't know what yours is going to look like, but mine doesn't trend towards stuff that I heard in the last 10 years.
No.
Because it doesn't have the greatest impact on me.
I did consider one of the albums that we've reviewed as a new album. Did consider it. It did make my shortlist. So
I considered two albums that I wouldn't consider for classic because they were too new.
Yeah. A couple of votes for Tool and Nima, which I find is... the reason I find that interesting is...
How do you pronounce that?
Anima?
Is it Anima?
I always thought it was Anima.
Okay.
Like Anima.
Pronunciation is definitely not my strong suit.
Pronunciation, so. Yeah.
Imagine that.
Beat right. Your own punchline.
Which I find really interesting because the only way you really can listen to that album is if you own it on CD. It's not on streaming.
And if you've been injecting heroin and you want to die.
That's the thing. It's not exactly the sort of album that's going to get repeat airplay on Triple M in Brisbane, is it?
But Triple J played the fucking coit out of that era of Tool.
Oh yeah, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah. But only
the hits as well. Like it was only ever the big singles. Like, and there's a whole lot more to those albums than those singles ever are. And that I think is the difficult part of those albums.
There was about four or five of that tracks off that vintage of Tool that got regular play on Triple J.
Yeah, but I think the strength of that, and I own that album on CD, and I went back and listened to it this week. It is a album. It is something that should be listened.
An album. You're talking to two, three English students here. An album.
I didn't do it very well, Mike.
No, we were shit, but we enrolled.
It's something that should be listened to start to finish. Like it is written to be listened to.
It's full, a continuous
not just
piece.
Not just as a single, but it's just. Like if I get the feeling I wouldn't mind listening to a bit of Tool. It's not that easy a thing to do in this today and age, which is why I was surprised that it popped up a few times in lists. So
you reckon that might just be the opposite of recency bias, which is everything that was around when I was a teenager is better bias.
Well, maybe it's that people don't remember what the actual album sounds like. It's more what they remember it sounding like.
Well, again, or it's interpreting the selection criteria. Like, it is, I'm just going to pick my favourite albums. Which is fine, because, you know, you're stuck on a desert island.
Okay,
so we deliberately didn't overplay the desert island part, I have to say. We didn't, it's not like we said, right, worry about the sand between your toes and whether you get to eat anything. It's just, the concept is more about, if you had to listen to these five albums at the exclusion of the rest of music, what would they be? Not... You're on a desert island. You're in an existential crisis. You're incredibly depressed because now you've been abandoned by all humanity. That's not quite as important. Although
I was going to say that did come up because Vanessa even said to me tonight. This is my wife. For those people that don't realize that I am married,
Malaf.
She said,
I had to do that for the at the drive through guys who have also submitted some suggestions, and that's kind of one of their things.
And we'll start, if you like, with her five. So
with Yoav,
she wanted something that she could have a bit of a dance to. So, and she sort of compromised by not having a full on dance album. So she picked Michael Franny and Salmonella Dub as the two, One Drop East as the two sort of. You know, they're a little bit downbeat, but they're, you know, you can dance to them. So, Michael Franny is, I'm trying to just remember exactly which one that she picked.
Everyone deserves music. That's the
one.
Yeah,
I think, she's sort of, Everyone Deserves Music. The songs from the Front Porch, which is a little bit more maudlin, I guess. So she went Florence and the Machine, Lungs, Coldplay, Rush of Blood to the Head, Salmonella Dub, One Drop East, Hilltop Hoods, The Calling. So One Drop East, The Calling, and Everyone Deserves Music was sort of her upbeat, you know, I'm on a desert island, I need cheering up music. But it was framed in that way, like I'm on a desert island and need something to sort of cheer me up a bit.
That's interesting because we kind of wanted to get away from that, but a lot of people have framed it in that context. But everyone has interpreted the criteria differently.
So what have you got from our Twitter friends?
So I was just going to say, Adam knows Franti better than I do, because I think Adam's actually been to see him play live, haven't you?
Been there a couple of times. Used to be my real go-to. Actually, he's a fantastic live performer. Just unbelievably live.
I've seen him live at least 5 times. He's unbelievably live. Knows how to work a crowd. Knows his people, I guess, is the way that I would put it. Had everyone lie in the mud at a blues festival 1 year, and I was just like, and I was one of them. I'm like, why am I lying in the mud? I don't know, but I'm
because Brandy told you to. Don't ask questions.
Pretty much
scary looking guy on stage that just told me to. No worries.
Not in my top five, but I can understand the appeal. So.
It's very joyous music. It's just joy. His music, it's real.
That's what Vanessa said. She said every time she listens to it, she's like, "This guy wants me to be happy." And I never really thought about it that much, but that is definitely his attitude. Like he wants.
That
to
is
make
a beautiful
life...
quality for a human to have about another human.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting thing because, as I said, when you watch this guy on stage, like he is quite a physically imposing guy.
He's a fucking huge unit, isn't he? He looks like the Predator, doesn't he?
And the first time I saw him, he just walked out on stage with an acoustic guitar and played an acoustic version of Everybody Deserves Music, just in a spotlight. But he looked really dominant, and there's this sort of really weak, sort of fragile voice, and it just didn't sort of match up. And then he sort of finished that one, and another five big, strong dudes walked onto stage, and they just dropped into The Party Ain't Started. And the place just went nuts. I was at the arena, and there's like you could see them from the blinders. The first, 30 rows.
That's
just
the arena in Brisbane. With him.
Yeah. And it was just unbelievable the way it happened. And from that point on, he played 3 hours, and you wouldn't
Holy
have missed
shit.
A bit of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he gives the people what they want.
He does give the people what they want, and he's got. And it's not like a slack 3 hours; like it's a fucking high energy 3 hours. So. Yeah.
Mm. Well, he needs to be that big so he can live off his muscle reserves while he's bouncing up and down.
Gotcha.
What else you got for me, Doc?
Well, our mates on the drive-thru pod, formerly The Agonomist, who have given us shouts over the time, we threw the word out, and they both piped up with their top fives. They, of course, participate in the end-of-year massive piss-up / Spotify song selection criteria thing that they put up as a podcast and as a Spotify list that I've referred to a few times on the pod. So Dan and Dave both sent me lists. Dave sent his list through, which is basically as follows. A Mark Lanegan bubblegum, not simply because there's a song about waiting for a ship. Number two, The Black Crowes America, which I can very much vouch for, because that was a very good album. R.E.M. Monster. This songwriting and stylistic peak, fuck what you heard. This is Dave's comments, not mine. Number four was Feist Metals, arguably the best album this decade. And number five, Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions. And having, as a result of this podcast, actually gone back and listened to some early Public Enemy, there's some fucking good shit in there. Yeah. So, I can vouch for that. And although the idea of a Chuck D and the guy from Cypress Hill and the back end of Rage Against the Machine covers album is terrible, the reality from the stuff I've seen on the net is fucking immense.
Good.
They just sound huge.
Well, it's something that we'll probably get into more next week, but sometimes...
Because we are, because next week we're reviewing Rage Against the Machine's debut as a classic album. And check our Spotify playlist for all the other details of the albums that Bezo picked for newbies.
But the Avalanches are doing the comeback thing this week, and I think sometimes it's good for an old thing to live up to the hype. It's nice when we're just doing new stuff, but sometimes it's good to see the old crews bring the heat.
Well, do the maths on how many times we've actually reviewed old bands that are doing comebacks versus new bands that neither of us knew about. It's probably a majority, not an overwhelming majority, but it's maybe a majority in favour of old bands doing continuation rather than new bands.
How many have done it? The Prodigy is the one that jumps out, and that's about it.
That was a really successful continuation.
And one other, which I'll get to when I get to my list, so...
How many people nominated the Avalanches in the numbers that you saw? The original one.
Nobody picked that one. No, on Facebook. Someone on Twitter did.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, on the ones I saw on Twitter.
Spanky.
So Spanky, our listener Spanky nominated the Avalanche's first album, which is all it needs to be referred to as, because it's no longer their only album, but it's their first album. of the late 90s, in places 1 through 5. And then he asked whether he could retrospectively take it off and replace it with the new album, Sound Unheard. He's a little bit unwell and needs to sit in a dark room for a bit.
Just of those, there was a couple more from Twitter. Ben said Stone Roses debut, 808. 808, some heartbreak. Kanye West, good kid.
I was thinking Ben Kazupe. Yes.
Yeah. Mad City by Kendrick Lamar and... Kanye West, Good City Mad. Good Kid, Mad City. Kendrick Lamar, Doolittle. And Pixies, Exile on Main Street.
You need to try that again. You need to try that again. Good Kid, Mad City was the Kendrick. My God, what's happened there?
I think he's flipped some of the... The heavens have opened up on Lantana Land.
Is that on you? I was thinking Adam Static hitting it up.
You talk for a little bit. I'm just going to mute this for a second.
Can you just mute yourself? Go away, Bezo. So what Bezo was trying to say was Ben Kazupe wrote in and said all those things, except that Bezo's got the titles and the albums mixed up. Exile on Main Street was not done by the Pixies. It was actually done by Adam. Adam?
No.
Exile on Main Street was done by... The Rolling Stones.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Not a fan.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. Good Kid, Mad City. Who was that done by?
No idea.
Ask Kendrick. This is worst fucking quiz game in the history of the world.
Yeah, I know.
And Doolittle was by the Pixies. That was their big early 90s kind of throwing down the gauntlet album. We don't have Bezo, but we do have... recorded noise.
Is he currently building the ark out there?
I think he's... Well, the thing is, Bezo has a farm on a hill, and the problem with having farms on hills is that the rain runs off the hill and is no longer on your dirt anymore. So anytime it rains at Bezo's place, it's an occasion to bust out the good champagne. The problem is when it rains so loudly that it sounds like somebody is doing static sound effects into the microphone, which is what we've got at the moment. Which reminds me, it doesn't remind me at all. I was halfway through talking about the At the Drive-Thru Boys. So we've had Dave's five. It might be the time to get into Dan's five. Dan was very quick off the mark with his listings, and also asked for a couple of he asked for a couple of mulligans as well. But we couldn't provide those because we're cheap and we can't be bothered. This is me padding because I can't find the information. We're professional. Here we go.
I know a Rolling Stones album, jeez.
So, well,
I only know the songs, I don't know the album.
Biggest Banquet? I mean, Sticky Fingers?
Oh, yeah. I never much of a... I like the songs, I never really sort of... got into enough to have the albums, though.
No, well, I have to say, bag. Nor I. And I almost picked 40 Winks. 40 Winks. That's a fucking betting store. That's like Captain Snooze's fucking mortal enemy. No, I almost picked 40 Licks, but I eventually decided to have no compilation albums. But 40 Licks, which is the Stones compilation from the mid-60s right through to the late 90s, is really, really good.
Well, see, this is what... And you'll get into more of this later. This is the conundrum that I have. The sort of the perfectionist in me didn't let me not do that. And I had to try really hard to pull myself back from doing all of those sort of albums because I'm such a perfectionist, I guess, and I just can't deal with that, you know, that not be the whole album not being good, that it's really hard to find one albums where you just went...
Exactly right.
Oh, no, I mean, can't skip that album. So I really had to pull myself back from just going compile, best of sort of thing. But
a live album, which is kind of like a compilation because they're playing their greatest hits in live, usually.
Well, I had a live album as my Oh, I'm back. I had a live album as
he my, lives. As dun my, dun dun.
Just off the list. Just didn't quite make it. I've moved. I've
popped one in
studio,
because.
By the way.
Oh, hello. All right, I was just getting to Dan from Drive Thru Pod's list. So his list was originally The Libertines, Up the Bracket, DJ Shadow, introducing Carl Cox, Fact, Cutting Cheating here as a introducing. Did I say introducing?
You did, yes.
Imagine me mispronouncing that. Carl Cox, Fact, which is Kind of Cheating as its compilation. Oasis, Definitely Maybe, In Your Face, Bitch! And number one, The Stone Roses, self-titled.
Couldn't you have talked about
and
that
then
while I
subsequently,
wasn't on the podcast?
Sorry?
Couldn't have you talked about Oasis while I was off doing something?
Definitely Maybe. And he wants some honourable mentions. And he was also thinking about changing out the bottom one, which is The Libertines. And in fact, he did in the end. The Clash, London Calling, The Prodigy, Music for the Children's Generation, Chemical Brothers, Exit Planet Dust, good shout, Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, and Church's Every Open Eye, which he subsequently asked to be subbed in for that Scabby Junkies band, which I took to mean The Libertines, because they are fucked.
That doesn't disqualify a whole lot of bands.
No, it doesn't. No, no. We're talking about a Scabby Junkies band just before, in terms of the band that you couldn't name, who did Exile on Main Street.
That's right.
So
I don't have any Scabby Junkies in here. Well, actually, no. Oh, fuck. He died of heroin, and he died of being old. He died of alcohol. Oh, shit. So that's gone well.
Genius is flawed, after all.
Well, you can't make art if you're not fucked up. You had Ben Kazuki's stuff.
He says to the artist.
I'll run through a few of the Facebook ones. So Shane Cobbin, who used to work quite a bit at the Alley for me, he had the Ben's Radiohead tour.
Just hold
album.
On. For those who are new, because there might be a few who are new to the pod, explain what the Alley was.
So the Alley was it was inside
Brisbaneites will probably remember it, but yeah.
If you've ever been to a 10-pin bowling alley, it was inside a bowling alley. We were essentially three lanes wide, maybe two lanes. So, like, if you can imagine, wow. Two lanes had been reclaimed and a brick wall had been put up and turned into a pool hall / live music venue. That's what we were. We were sort of very small. Original live music, no covers at all.
Wonderwall.
No Wonderwall. Like one of the very first things I had done when I, because when I took over as manager, we were all wearing shirts that looked like we were just a pool hall. You know, they were like black t-shirts with a sort of the Alley written on it, and like we're a sort of low level pool hall. So I wanted us to be a little bit more proud of our live musical roots, so I had this logo done up that sort of said support original music, because I thought that was a pretty important part of who we were.
You kept that for the Rev too, didn't you? Because it used many quite a long time ago, you sent me a Rev stubby holder that had the same motto on it.
Mm-hmm. And that was the whole idea. And the people that worked there were also pretty passionate about live music and you know, supporting bands trying to make it. And not too many bands that played at the Alley have made it, I guess. But, you know, you got to start
somewhere.
Apart from
the ones that turned up for after parties that weren't agreed upon by the licensing
board. You know,
as we talked about in previous weeks.
The hoods,
that's your limitations gone on that one. You're not going to get done or anything, you know, retrospectively
I think Queensland Liquor Licensing have got... I think I ended up paying something north of $10,000 worth in fines in my time there. So, because I was the licensee on the Rev license. So, the hoods are probably the
ouch.
The Queensland Liquor Licensing a C word that you're
I've heard
very fond of.
Massive, massive cunts.
A lot of these guys either worked as bar people or sound techs. While we're at the Alley. So Cobbs went for the Ben's Radiohead, Tool, The Best of Nick Cave, Good News for People Who Love Bad News, Modest Mouse, and Lullabies to Paralyze, Queens of the Stone Age.
That's a good album. I almost went for Rated R in mine, because I think Rated R is just a slightly better album end to end.
Jeremy, who was one of the sound techs and also had a band that played there quite a bit, he also had Modest Mouse, Good News for People Who Love Bad News.
Elliot's, I've heard a lot about that album. I've never really got into it.
No.
Is that the one with fucking, what's their one song? Ride On, Shine On. Adam's probably performed it millions of times in covers bands. What's Modest Mouse's one song, Adam?
Not I, no.
Oh, fucking, it's like Ride On or Shine On or something.
Either Or by Elliot
this
Smith.
This is not a helpful contribution.
Nux Vomica, The Veils, Wish, The Cure, and Stoned and Throne, Jesus and the Mary Chain. Or The Jesus Holy and Mary shit. Chain, because I always get that wrong. The Jesus. Something in my head. The Jesus and Mary Chain, which is one of my favourite albums, but I wouldn't pick it to listen to for the rest of my life.
No.
Or he said just five Prince albums, because Jeremy is a massive, massive Prince fan.
Yeah, well...
The other guy that was one of our sound techs had Ruben. He had Sasquatch, Nosedive, Band of Skulls, Sweet Sour, Queens of the Stone Age, Lullabies to Paralyze as well, and the White Album by the Beatles.
Do you think Lullabies to Paralyze being prominent is a timing thing? Because that was when... Because I'm imagining this is about when... Because Lullabies to Paralyze came out in the early aughts, and this is when... This is when you were doing your thing there.
Well, I think all these guys have been to a lot of festivals and a lot of live music, so they probably saw that tour, and I would imagine
that
tour has cemented that album into their brains. I could be wrong. I'll have to talk to Cobbs about it, and I'll give you some feedback next time. But
they're both fucking brilliant albums. That and Rated R, but I just think that Rated R's just got a bit more light and shade and more interest to it. Now, I always think about having it for a classic, but I always think, well, it does... It's hard to have a classic where you know there are tracks you'd skip at the back end because you get into self-indulgent flog. The problem with Lullabies to Paralyze is they go deep into self-indulgent flog because the whole... There's a theme of pirate radio, and they kind of... At the end of songs, they kind of go off into static and then into snippets of bits of radio songs and back out again. You think, well... Great, but it doesn't make the thing more listenable. It's just you masturbating. And, you know, I don't really want to see that again after that time it was on the internet. Anyway.
A couple of the bar staff. So, Bridgeford had Blue Lines, Massive Attack, Tool, Introducing...
Which we've had as a... Did we have that as a classic or not?
Blue Lines. We had Mezzanine.
No, Blue Lines is my favourite. Is my pick.
Is your favourite? Yeah. Introducing pick, again by DJ Shadow, which I do think is a fucking cracking album. Goo, Sonic Youth, and Kid A by Radiohead.
Did we do a DJ Shadow album, or was that was DJ Format? Sorry,
DJ Format.
So
not
DJ
yet.
Shadow, I think, is collaborating with Run the Jewels.
Oh, okay. That'd be quite
because
a bit. Quite a good collaboration.
It was a track because I thought it was. I think it was DJ Shadow who came out and did a song with Run the Jewels at Coachella, and it was like. I mean, I'm not a dance. I'm not a hip hop. And whatever the Run the Jewels are doing, I'm not. In theory, a fan of it, but I was
like
a massive
live,
fan so. Of what I watched.
Yep. So
dramatic pause, dun dun dun. We're professionals.
Lenny from Brother Stoney, who sort of like a local hip hop legend, who's also a massive funk and soul DJ sort of guy. So I know only one of the five bands that he put up, which was interesting because sort of everyone else.
So Brother, what's the evolutionary tree of Brother Stoney? Where did they fit in? They fit in with a lot of other bands, didn't they?
So Lazy Grey was the MC for Resin Dogs originally, and then they had their, you know, Brother Stoney was sort of their full-time project that played in that early hip-hop scene before Australian hip-hop was sort of popular, I guess. But they were them and Resin Dogs were the two sort of big hip-hop bands in Brisbane before hip-hop became a thing.
And anybody who's been to an Australian rock festival before midday in the early aughts has seen Resin Dogs, because that was when they played, and that was they were really, really fucking good.
Well, brothers don't.
There's nothing harder than firing up a crowd that don't even know they should be there yet.
Yeah, Brother Stain were probably on the same gig, but at, you know, right at the start, you know, 11 a.m. or something. But Lenny loves his sort of old school funk and soul, and I don't know any of these bands except one, but I'll run through them: Tame and Should, Evolution, Spectrum, Molsago, Kavas, Jute, Wide Open, Lee Moses, Time and Place, and Plutonic Lab, which is a hip hop album, Code Over Colors.
Now that's this is just niche as niche.
Yeah,
I've got nothing there. You got anything, Adam?
Well,
no, not at all.
The thing is, these are the guys.
Well, congratulations to Lenny for out niching the lot of us.
Well, the thing is that these are the sort of artists that these guys are sampling. You know, the reason that they sample this stuff is because they're into that really obscure funk or soul or jazz or whatever that they can sample because they're not. And this is my philosophical objection to guys like Kanye West and Jay-Z, because they're sampling massive, massive pop songs. They're not sampling obscure stuff that no one knows the hooks to.
The work's already been done for them, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The everybody knows the hook, so it's pretty easy to get into the song. You know, it's a lot harder.
The idea is you're taking a piece of a small piece of someone else's music and making that the instrument.
Mm.
If the instrument itself is already a massive pop success, then you're really just doing a cover
version. It's just revoicing it, isn't
A lot of the time. You're just being like Puff Diddley when he did the revoiced version of Kashmir on the Godzilla soundtrack. Basically took that massive Led Zeppelin riff and just went, over the top of it, and that apparently turns it into a hit.
Sad thing is, of course, that it did. So the indictment, you know.
Does all that money make him happy? Probably.
I bet you it does him. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it helps.
So Anita, who is one of my main bar chicks, she had a very interesting mix. She had Rodriguez.
You sexist pig. I would never want her to work for you.
That's probably right.
I notice it's a fucking sausage fest in your workplace too.
He'd never be your bar chick, Bezo.
I have a fantastic rack these days.
And Rodriguez, Cold Fac, Counting Crows, August and Everything After, The Essential.
We've had more than one Rodriguez suggestion.
I think I've had it kick up about three times in the Facebook group. So
Rodriguez was the Sugar Man guy, wasn't he?
Mm. That's another one I know nothing about, Doc. So. Yeah.
Wasn't he that obscure fucking...
That's him. Sugar Man's the big song.
Yeah. So he was this musician who was kind of slightly obscure in the 60s, then disappeared, and there was a documentary made about him called Searching for Sugar Man? Waiting for Sugar
Searching
Man?
Searching for Sugar Man.
I think you know the story better than I do, Adam. What's?
I don't know. I don't know it that much, but yeah, just...
You already know slightly more than me, which is more than me.
Oh, look, you know, he's the guy that sort of got covered by a whole... But, you know, Dave Matthews covered him, which kind of brought him back again. And you know, but yeah, Searching for Sugar Man was the film that sort of, you know, they went out to find him and found him. It just brought the music back, I guess, you know, that was... You know, and it's got that kind of feel and... You know, lots of people played off that, you know, that sort of feel coming back. You know, you had the second coming of, you know, Carlos Santana sort of was getting popular, that sort of, you know, so he was probably the mainstream version of what this was to the sort of independent sort of music, very, you know, that very Latin sort of feel. And but yeah, Sugar Man's the one.
So his sound is kind of Latin American guitarist kind of thing?
I haven't listened to a lot of it, yeah.
He's from Detroit, mate. He's the...
I know, but his sound
kind of got that feel. It's got that sort of feel. I know. I haven't listened to a lot of it, but I sort of got that sort of.
It was a massive hit in South Africa, of all places.
Mm. Yeah, it says that.
Okay.
And that was one of the plot points of the movie. It's not a spoiler, but it's one of the plot points is that it was a massive hit in South Africa, particularly in apartheid community. You know, black communities in South Africa. Anyway, that was just a sideline in Rodriguez. He's the kind of He's the kind of band that my my Italian uncle, who's a kind of a disaffected academic, would like. So there's that.
So I'll just finish off with the sort of bar staff crew.
So so what was the rest of Anika's?
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, 100 Days, 100 Nights. Another, I like that album. That's a very good album. And Pearl Jam.
You made her do that, otherwise you would have fired her.
Pearl Jam 10.
I actually thought about that one. Don't be knocking, you know. I mean, not that
I thought about Versus.
I thought about both of them, but you know, I think the interesting thing just from listening to that, and something to keep in mind, as with all the hottest 100s and all that sort of stuff, is how many female albums have come through.
Yeah.
How many? Yeah, there's the first one.
How many female selectors have we had? It's a fucking sausage fest. Basically, women don't want to talk to us.
Julianne, who is a researcher that went to did postgrad with Vanessa, picked the Bangles, Everything by the Bangles, and she has said to me before that she thinks that like, you know, Bangles, you just think it's going to be really poppy, but she said it's an amazing album and people should check it out if they haven't heard that album. So
they were really, really good songwriters.
She's not someone that, like, you know, the other ones were Trouble Will Find Me by The National and Under the Pink by Tori Amos, Disintegration by The Cure. Like, she's a fairly wide-ranging musical sort of person.
Yeah,
so
listen,
I'd rather set my pubes on fire and throw myself in a lake than listen to Tori Amos again. I had a flatmate who used to play it on repeat, and Jesus, fuck me in the ear. I'd rather not. But we were speaking of Pearl Jam 10, and coincidentally, that's the lead-off track from our very good friend Mr. Albion Love Den, Mr. Ben Connolly, who gets paid to review music, and yet for some reason is deigns to patronise our total shit. Thank you for your care and attention, Mr. Connolly. We don't deserve it. But yeah, so
it is a good album, though. Like, that's, I mean, that, I'm personally, when I, you know, the grunge thing came along, people were Nirvana or they were Pearl Jam.
We were kind of anti, weren't we? I mean, I'm thinking back to where we were. We were much more likely to listen to fucking Weird Al Smells Like Nirvana than fucking...
I liked 10. Like, it was... And, you know, it's the... You just look at the songs on it and it's just like, yeah. Even Flow is a very, very fun song to play live too.
Yeah, it's got a tremendous fury to it. But Ben's comment was... 10, it's like, and Ben is a Pearl Jam fan, it has to be said. It's like mother's milk to me, for me. This and Nevermind hit right along with universe shifting changes to my life. We'll always look back on it fondly. His second album was an album called Sergeant Pepper's. Do you know who that's by, Adam?
Never heard of it.
Yes, that would be by the
Beatles. That's by that band who were around at the same time as the Stones. So much joy and intrigue packed in such a short space of time gets the brain matter working. These words are written by a professional music critic, so that's why I'm trying to enunciate them clearly. Number three is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds' Murder Ballads, because even desert islands have 4 AMs and red wine, and that needs a soundtrack.
That's interesting that that's a compilation of cover songs, too. Like, that's kind of both things at the same time, isn't it? The Murder Ballads one.
Weren't they
old songs, or are they just... I'm not sure. I always thought a lot of that stuff was old, really obscure songs, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe it was old songs written to sound like...
Maybe it just sounded like it. Yeah, maybe it just sounded like that. I think I got as far as the Kylie Minogue song and went,
maybe for practice. Ballpark Music, Happiness in Surrounding Suburbs, direct antidote to Nick Cave. Which is probably saves you from throwing yourself off the nearest fucking cliff, presumably. Intelligent, sharp pop, which brings a smile, and it makes me think of my wife. Duh. She's not reading this, mate. She doesn't have to know. And the final song is The Avalanches. So much going on, you can't switch off. It'll take my mind off the fact that I'm stranded on a fucking desert island. Thank you, Ben. We appreciate your contribution. We would have had Ben on if we could have figured out a way to do it, but we couldn't, so we didn't. So we haven't.
So instead you got me. God, yeah, that's a terrible...
Yeah, but we know how to get you on.
terrible and it's substitute. Better than...
You are a classically trained pianist, so.
Make sure you pronounce
We've got
correctly.
One joke. We're going to use it.
I can remember first sort of chatting to Albion Loveden, even though we must have crossed paths at the alley because we were in the same scene in Brisbane fairly often, by giving him absolute curry about being a massive Pearl Jam fan. So, one of the other.
What don't you like about that album, though?
Is it more the fact that they turned into weird Christian fuckheads, whereas Nirvana disintegrated into explosions?
No.
Because I think that's got a lot to do with the way we view Pearl Jam. In the same way,
if Kurt was just an angry old man, like all of the angry old men, like Eddie Vedder's turned into, I guess. Like, would they be as interesting?
Well, the thing is, Pearl Jam have turned into U2. and we don't respect what U2 did in the 80s because of the fact that U2 turned into this sad, lumbering, corporate behemoth that disappeared up their own asshole. But they genuinely did stuff that was really groundbreaking and cool in the 80s. But no one gives a fuck anymore. And Pearl Jam have kind of, not to the same extent, but kind of have the same problem in that they, as Kurt wrote in his suicide note, it's better to burn out than fade away. Was it burn out and rust out? I think it was a Neil Young lyric. Burn out, it's better to burn out than rust out. Pearl Jam have rusted out.
No.
But not that album.
My Pearl Jam thing is I lived in a share house second year I was in Brisbane. And this is...
Oh, no, you're right. Yours is more the same thing that caused us to hate Lives Throwing Copper.
Yeah, so I live with...
Well, I don't hate that album.
Of course you don't. No, of course not. It was they only owned two albums,
it was
and that was
putting it on at all those parties.
It was 10 and Verses, and they only played 10 and Verses. So all year, all I heard every second day was 10 and Verses, and it's simply just I can't listen to it. Like I actually think Verses is a pretty good album, but I put it on and I'm just like, oh, I can't listen to this. It just drives me up the wall.
Back there, aren't you? But I guess at least you can understand how it'd be their Desert Island album, obviously, because they almost made it by definition anyway. It was just your Desert Island, not theirs.
Yeah. And your Desert Island where the washing up was never done on time and nobody took the bins out and it was always someone else's turn to clean the toilet and nobody ever cleaned the fucking toilet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Share houses. Avoid them. So that's Ben. Who else do we have from our wonderful submitters who have got... things to tell us about the things they want to know.
I'll throw in one of the guys, a couple of the guys I coach, a couple of the younger guys. This was an interesting one. Cav had Limp Bizkit.
Bizzo talks to kids.
Limp Bizkit, Chocolate Starfish, Jay-Z, Blueprint.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Powderfinger, Odyssey moly. Number 5, Blink 182, Enema of the State.
That's the worst album. And you need to run this bloke more in training. Run him up hills.
Funk Wars,
lots
the
of hills.
So that was
run him up vertical hills. Yeah, nah.
And then one of the really
listening to this, though.
One of the really younger guys I coach had Conan Moccasin. Does anyone know them?
I know them. He's a Kiwi musician.
Forever Dolphin.
He kind of sounds like he sounds like Serge Gainsbourg or something. Oh,
okay,
like, one of those old kind of French. Sounds like an old French crooner, but he's actually from fucking like the middle of the North Island.
Forever Dolphin Love, Pet Sounds, Beach Boys, Another Green World by Brian Eno, Quarantine, The Past, The Best of Payment, and Abbey Road, The Beatles. Which I thought was
the who.
The Beatles.
Oh, that's that band that were around when the Stones were around. Yeah, I remember that.
I thought it was very interesting for a guy in his early 20s, that selection. But anyway.
To be listening to all that stuff sounds like it was recorded in the 60s, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so shall we move on? What else have you got?
Well, let's... I just want to make sure we've got everyone. Oh, no, we haven't got everyone.
We definitely haven't got... I don't think we can get through everyone on Facebook because I've still got about another 20 people.
Well, we can, but we can get through all the people who get all the our listeners because that's more important. Jolene's Alexander
Farmer mate.
Our farmer mate tweeted us on the Bulls Podcast Twitter account, which I don't currently have open. Do you have it open? Because I don't have it open.
No, I don't have it
this
open.
This is me talking out the side of my mouth into a microphone, which is completely pointless.
No. Hang on, I do have it open, but I can't find
his tweet. Would you like to?
All I could find was him getting into the...
Oh, it was a DM. It was a DM.
He was getting into our classic album for next week, so
he was. He gave us heaps of shits for that, and and I was listening to it earlier in the week, and thinking, God, I'm clever for picking that album.
Of course,
because
you were.
I'm a fucking child. No, I've got it here. John Alexander, who's a wheat farmer from out the back of where they grow wheat, so a lot of this stuff is either Desert Island Discs or sitting on the tractor, waiting, just driving up and down, you know, doing what you do, kind of. So five albums. Here goes. Okay, Computer, Radiohead, either it or the Benz, all-time favourites. I think I'd go the Benz, but that's just me. The Eels, Electroshock Blues. For some reason, I love this disc more than the other two early Eels CDs, which are great. The concert blew my mind, and it goes from major pain to great uplift and hope. I would echo that with the Eels. They seem to be able to stab a knife into the human condition and really, particularly lyrically, very good at getting to the heart of the futility and waste of human existence. Dark Side of the Moon, or Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd. I think John's edging his bets a bit. Flood, They Might Be Giants. He wants some fucking happy music, and fair enough too. And lastly, one that you like, Bezo, Angel Dust by Faith No More, although I nearly went Queens of the Stone Age, Songs for the Deaf, or Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile with Teeth. Just classic alternative albums that I listen to and they don't get old. Thanks, John. We appreciate your input.
There was someone on Facebook picked that Nine Inch Nails album as well, but speaking of Pink Floyd, because it has cropped up a little bit as well, and Pam...
Really? Disinfect for that? Because Pink Floyd is the most turgid shit. If I'm on a fucking desert island and Pink Floyd's playing, I'm getting in the sea and I'm not getting out.
Well, Pam, who lives with us and helps us with the kids, I hit her up for her list and she went with The Smiths, The Queen Is Dead, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, The Clash, London Calling, Jeff Buckley, Grace, and Miles Davis, Kinda Blue, which I thought was a very interesting mix.
So we've got three albums to cut yourself to. One album from a person who will cut you, Miles Davis, and the other one, which I'd forgotten.
I think you could probably cut yourself.
This is not the send us your list of albums and we'll slag it off. That's not what the point of this exercise is, although it's rapidly turning into it. Have we covered all our listener submissions, or are there others that you want to get to?
Shall we have a quick drinks break and come back and talk about our picks?
Let's do that. Let's do that.
All right.
Catch you again shortly, folks.
Folks, as a little bit of bonus content, here is a quick chat I recorded with Mr. John Birmingham, author and the godfather of the Balls podcast. Enjoy. Hey, Burma, how you going?
I'm good, buddy. How's things?
Not too bad. For those that don't know, Burma is like the Balls podcast's guardian angel. He kindly hosts us on his very popular website and gives us a bit of airtime in the wider world.
Well, you guys actually helped me out because I've been very busy this year, so I just can't update the burger as much as I would like, and it's nice to have other content on there occasionally, particularly the potty, because I was doing my own for a while, but I spent like a day and a half on it every week, which was just getting out of hand for what's effectively a hobby.
Yep, I was listening to a couple of podcasts this week about the business of podcasting and how, you know, a lot of guys now need those ads because it takes so much time to produce a pretty good podcast. But I've actually been listening back to ours in the car as a sort of fully edited podcast, and I was surprised how much better we've got at it, to be honest. So I guess anything you practice enough, we've done them. sort of over 110 episodes now. So,
jeez, mate, you guys are hardcore.
Yeah, we're getting up there. We've got our own little in jokes going now, so that's always one thing. But our little conceit was, because this is the 50th episode of the After Dark, which has sort of turned into the full-blown music podcast, was the classic BBC Desert Island Discs. So we wanted to know what your five records for the till the end of time would be.
All right. Well, let's we'll probably do this alphabetically.
Ooh, wow.
That's the way they were coming up in my in my feed.
Very high fidelity.
So the first one is it's a self-titled album by a French African woman who goes by the name of Asha, spelled A-S-A. And half of her songs are in some impenetrable French African dialect that I don't really understand, but they're really good. I'm not even sure how I came across this woman. It's quite possible that she popped up in a on Beats Radio, which I occasionally find stuff on Beats One. I'll play it for 4 or 5 minutes at a time because I can't stand it for anything more than that. And almost every time I've played it for 4 or 5 minutes, I flick it over because, you know, it's for all those young people out on my lawn. It's not for me. But I'm actually looking here at iTunes, and I can see that just below or just above the self-titled Usher album, there's Alicia Cara's Know It All, which I also got off Beats One. So
I was going to say, how are you coping with the death of RDO?
Look, it's harsh, but I was talking to my daughter about it this morning because she was screaming up a storm at 5 a.m. She gets up and hits the treadmill because, you know, she's hardcore. But I could hear all this, you know, swearing and grunting and. I went to see where her Apple Music just wasn't playing her playlists. Stuff had disappeared, and it was for some reason iCloud Music Library had turned itself off. And the only reason I knew to deal with this by turning it back on, because the same thing had happened to me more than once. So I miss the simplicity of RDO. I was an RDO person rather than Spotify, and I understand each of the services is, you know, they have different accents and different inflections. And for me, RDO really worked. And I wish Apple would just spin off Apple Music streaming into a standalone app. And I understand why that's a lot harder to do.
Yeah, they got too much legacy stuff there.
Yeah, exactly right. It's I think as Jason Snell says, it's like trying to rebuild the aircraft while it's in flight. So I do understand the difficulty, but then, you know, in the end, I just want the music to play. So I really do miss RDO. I used it in preference to iTunes, and I would have used it in preference to Apple Music, but of course it went out of business. So Usher is, it's not the kind of music I normally listen to. God help me, it actually sounds a bit like something you'd hear down at the WOM Adelaide Festival, which, you know, I probably run away from, pursued by vegans.
You should probably check out the Woodford Bill, mate. She might be playing Woodford 1 year.
I can't do it. So this is my the one point in my life at which I connect with that kind of music. It's it is when I play this self-titled album by Usher, and it's kind of, you know, it actually sounds like you just wandered into some African village, and, you know, there's some, you know, girl there who can sing really well, and she's just singing about life in the village. And when you actually listen to the lyrics, they're pretty dark, because I guess a lot of, you know, a lot of what she has come from is really dark. If I recall, and I'm tempted to click on the album to bring up the track list, but I'm not going to, because it'll start playing.
Anything could happen with Apple Music.
But the first track on the album is called Jailer, and it's a conversation between her and her jailer. And it talks about it obviously sort of, you know, in a meta narrative sense, talks about the power hierarchies and imbalances in a lot of African nations. But it also explains, if you listen to the lyrics, how the people who support those hierarchies are trapped within them just as much as the, you know, the poor buggers at the bottom of the totem pole. And it's, there's an enormous amount to listen to in this album, and I really like it.
Probably more than you're going to get out of a Taylor Swift lyric is what you're saying.
Probably. Yeah. I got no issues with T Swift. I think I've even got a copy of Red floating around here, because of course I didn't have to buy it. I stream it, but that's
my corner. I'm the Taylor Swift grump on the podcast. So, and Dr. Yobbe usually goes, who?
So. Yeah. So second in the list is, I thought I'd been so cool when I found this band, because I'd never heard of them. And I thought, oh, this is great. You know, I still got it. I'm still with it. I'm finding music no one's ever heard of.
I'm down with the kids.
And then I used my Discover Music app to, like, you know, look them up. That was some band from the 90s broke up back 25 years ago. But I think they're an American college band, or they certainly sound like an American college band, called Cute Is What We Aim For. And they remind me a lot of the sort of fuzzy pop, thrashy pop sound that sort of got a bit wiped out by Seattle. But the thing that's interesting about these guys is that they have a sort of Lana Del Rey act, which I really loved that first album, yeah, as Lana Del Rey, because I loved the premise of it, that she was, you know, that she's playing a character on that album, which not a lot of people seem to get, or if they did get it, they just for some reason were really pissed off that, you know, this person whose, you know, career is performance art was performing and doing some art. And the Del Rey character is, you know, she's very much I guess she's like a princess of the 1%, and she talks about the, you know, the disaffections and the first world problems of the 1% on that album, except when she doesn't. Occasionally she sort of harks back to her gnarly folk singer past. And the thing I like about Cute Is What We Aim For is they do a similar sort of thing but from a sort of male perspective. And so a lot of the songs, if you actually listen to them, they're really quite odious. They, you know, the guys in these songs are all called gents, and the women there in the songs are pretty much there only for the, you know, the amusement and the use of the gents. And
so it was written by the Queensland LNP, is what you're saying?
I can imagine a lot of young LNP thrusters playing this. And
not ironically, yeah,
enjoying it. Yeah, they. I don't think they would understand that. Again, there's a very strong performance aspect to what's going on here, and a role is being played. And there are some just some great thrashy poppy songs on this that I had. It was one of those weird albums that, again, it popped up in my feed. I think I found this on Ardio. Ardio was great for suggesting, you know, you probably enjoy this, and I guess they, you know, they realized that my musical taste had sort of become stuck in the mid-90s, because this is what they put in front of me. And they were right. I really did enjoy it. There's, you know, as an example of the sort of stuff they have, there is a, I think there's a song called The Fourth Drink Instinct, which is it's a story told from the point of view of this young woman who's obviously naive but thinks that she's not, and she sort of, you know, pushes herself into the world of the gents, and the gents just do her wrong. And it's a really good takedown of the predatory nature of successful masculinity. But again, I think a lot of people wouldn't get it. They just go, oh, you know, what a bunch of oiks.
I think Lily Allen's my favourite example of that style of music. The you know, the sweet pop with this sort of, you know, she's telling sort of stories that are skewering that sort of chav lifestyle in Britain. But you can just listen to it and think, oh, this is just sweet pop music. So
yeah, that sounds right. It's like moneyed up chavs, except in the US. And it's not sweet. It's kind of thrashy, poppy. But it's great to it's great to listen to. And if you make the mistake of actually attending to the lyrics, you can like have this moment where you
get a bit disturbed.
Shuts to shudder. I'm going to stick to my next one, even though it's sitting next to Fleetwood Mac's "Rumours" in my playlist. I'm not going to pick "Rumours," even though it's come back from the dead as an album with. Hipsters apparently started playing it on Sunday morning, you know, a couple of years ago to make themselves feel better after they'd been out, you know, taking drugs and bathing in beard oil all night. But I'm not going to go with "Rumours," even though I do like it. I'm going to go with "Flight Facilities." Really, really love "Flight Facilities." Again, it's an album I came across via streaming.
They are a massive, I think, Spotify just tweeted out their top 20 Australian acts this week, and I think they were in there. I'm pretty sure they were. So, they're big on the streams.
Yeah, I certainly picked them up via the stream. So there's quite a few albums to pick from, so I'm just going to pluck one out of the air, Down to Earth, which I think is for me, it's the sort of definitive Flight Facilities album because it sounds like it was put together in an airport in the 1920s. And I love the way that I have listened to this album a couple of hundred times now, and it still sounds new. I still couldn't tell you what track was coming next, and every time I do listen to it and I do sort of attend to it, I find new stuff in there. I think one of the reasons it's huge on the streams is that it's the kind of album you can stick on in the background and pay as much or as little attention to it as you want, and it will reward either approach, and that makes it a great pick for a desert island disc because, you know, you take it to the island and you're stuck with it for the rest of your life. And it doesn't matter because every day it sounds like something new.
Well, one of the things I've found with, you know, the Doc and I have different approaches. He has the once sober, once drunk approach, and I have the sort of in the car and then on the headphones approach. And a lot of albums you can listen to in the car, and they don't just sort of strike you, or the other way around. They sort of really grab you in the car, but when you listen to them on the headphones, they're a bit shallow.
I understand that.
But the really good albums do sort of, you know, you listen to them in the car and you can listen to them on one level, and you listen to the headphones and there's something about the production or the lyrics or something that just grabs you at a deeper level.
You're often hearing a lot more detail through the headphones. I found this possibly with the Flight Facilities album the other day. I had been playing whatever it was in the car for a while, and then for whatever reason I stuck my noise cancelling headphones on, and I had 20 minutes just to sit around and listen to some music, so I did, and it sounded like a different album. There was a lot more there. So fourth pick, and this is a very hard pick because I've got all of their discography laid out in front of me, but it is of course the Hilltop Hoods.
I thought you might go down that path. I'm finding I threw this out on Facebook, and Hilltops is probably one that's cut across gender and age the most, I think.
Yeah, I think they are. I reckon they're the most significant Australian musical act for a long time. And well, you see, one of the things that's happened, of course, with the atomization of mass culture is that it's very, very difficult to aggregate a mass audience nowadays.
Yeah.
And so you can have performers and musicians and artists who are hugely significant in the niche in which they work, but they never really escape that niche. And it is unusual for anybody working in music now to utterly dominate and define the, you know, the musical industry in the way that, say, Cole Chisel did in the 1980s. Yeah. So I hesitate to say that, you know, the Hilltop Hoods are the Cole Chisel of this generation, because I'll get beaten. But they are, in one sense.
For you, it's remarkable. For me, it's just like, even knowing that it's happened is completely baffling, because I started running a little tiny 150, 200 seat capacity, like full capacity music venue, where I was putting on, I used to run an Oz hip hop night, and I used to get bands up from, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, and my own staff thought I was insane. Like, you know, what the fuck are you doing? We're not going to get enough punters to run an Oz hip hop night. And like, yeah. I was getting the absolute best of the genre. I was getting, you know, The Herd and Coolism and, mm-hmm. and Hilltop Hoods and Bias and Bliss and Esso and those guys. And I was seen as insane, frankly. Like, the other music venues in Brisbane laughed at us. My own staff were downing us. And when the Hoods thing sort of broke and we were right on... That we were just behind the wave, like, they sold our place out twice. The first time was before they sort of broke on Triple J. They were just starting to take off.
Yeah.
And the second time was for the festival that we did, and they had well and truly broken, but and shouldn't have never come back and played a venue that size, but because they're incredibly nice guys, said,
yeah,
we'd promised we'd come back and play this festival, we'll come back and play it.
Well, I got into them via my... sister-in-law, who is at least 15, maybe 20 years my junior, and she was dating a guy who did some artwork for them. And I remember going around to a party at their place once, and she had, it was almost certainly state-of-the-art, just absolutely pounding out of the speakers, and I hadn't heard it before. I thought, gee, this is pretty good. And I got on with my sister-in-law, and so from that I went off and investigated further. And I would pick State of the Art because it is such a great album, and it has a fantastic song in it that if there was ever a Dave Hooper movie made, I would have to make sure it was in there. Parade of the Dead. It's one of the best, sort of narrative songs about a zombie uprising you'll hear in any genre. But that's not what I'm going to choose. I'm going to go The Hard Road, and I'm going to go Classic Hard Road rather than The Hard Road Restrung, which is, you know, a really interesting reinterpretation. And I really enjoy the way on Restrung that they actually rearrange some of the songs so that the stories they tell are quite different. But Hard Road, in its classic unadorned form, was the first album of the Hoods that I just thrashed until it was dead, and then I thrashed it some more. And it was one of those albums that you could listen to anywhere. You could listen to it while you were doing a really high intensity cardio workout. You could listen to it while you were vacuuming the house. And God knows from my RDO stats, I must have done that about 1,000 times. Got a lot of Saturday morning plays. You can listen to it while you're just, you know, sitting around, feet up, drinking a beer. And it is one of those albums which should end up somewhere in every top 100 album list so that people can, lose their shit and argue about it. And the thing that, I mean, it's got some great hooks, and the music is good, but the thing that I think drew me into it originally was their narrative power.
I was going to say,
great storytellers.
It's a little bit cinematic. It feels like Yeah, it feels like it's a solid piece of narrative carved into separate songs.
Yeah, that's right. It's these guys, they look to me like short story writers, and short story writing is so much harder than writing novels. I think there was a Raymond, Raymond Carver used to write short stories. There's a famous author who's got a great quote about short stories, which is that he doesn't write them because he doesn't have time. So your novels are a lot quicker. And every track on that album, and you know, to be honest, most of the tracks these guys put out are immaculately crafted short stories. And I just as a band sort of going beyond the album, the thing I like about them is that they work across genres. So you get some, you know, quite amazing sort of speculative fiction work like Parade of the Dead, and then you just I love the self-referential nature of a lot of hip hop, where they talk about themselves and they talk about their struggle, and coming to it cold, because you know, I didn't grow up with hip hop. I found that both vastly amusing and endearing, but also, you know, really quite powerful.
Okay, cool. So last album, what do you got for me?
Liz Phair, Exile in Guyville.
Wow.
I dig on Liz Phair. I think it's a bit unfortunate the way that, you know, the music industry has turned her into a sexified Disney princess on her later albums. And you know, actually, as far as sexified Disney princess music goes,
it's not too bad.
It's a good. It's really good. But I like the just the bleakness and the just the stripped back ascetic meanness of Guyville. It's everything is raw on that album. It feels a bit like you know, when Springsteen was recording albums on 8-tracks in his garage, even though he didn't have to because he could have bought a music studio and filled it up. You know, he was being a real man, and you know, he was actually, in many ways, he wasn't being real. He was, you know, he was performing. And the thing I like about Guyville is that, you know, this is an incredibly powerful album that feels like it has come out of some really raw passages in somebody's life.
It's that production thing is really interesting, because I think that's why with the Hoods I'll always go with the early album, because I think they're very interested in production and sounding better every time.
Yeah,
that just naturally they lose that rough edge because it gets produced out. And that's why I think I like The Calling the best, just because it's got that raw. It really captures the rawness of watching them live, and that's how I sort of remember them. So,
yeah.
And I think that would be a struggle for every band that starts off tiny with very limited production resources, and as you get more money and more resources, you naturally want to spend the money and do things better, but.
I was looking just along the line from Liz Phair here. I can see Lone Justice, which was an American cowpunk band of the 1980s, who had, again, like a really rough, raw, self-titled debut album, which I just loved and I still play years and years later on. It's one of the few country albums that's allowed in my collection. But the second album, which is a fine piece of music making called Shelter, is just produced out the wazoo, and I very rarely play it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Burmo, for your time this evening.
Cheers, mate.
It's been a pleasure. And actually, I was going to say, do you feel like you're a traitor to your generation? There's no Rolling Stones, no Bob Dylan. I don't know. What other bands should you have?
You'd need to get Fitzsimons on to do Dylan, and he'd just insist on doing five Dylan albums. Like,
I don't think Fitzsimons had ever listened to our podcast, but if you've ever heard Dr. Yobbo rant about Fitzsimons' sports writing, I don't think he'd ever come.
I can well imagine. I got a few of those floating around in the background, but it's the streaming, mate.
Yeah,
it throws the new stuff up.
Well, that's the whole idea of the podcast. So,
yeah,
cool. Thanks.
Cheers, buddy.
See ya.